Love this podcast? Consider supporting this show. You decide how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Visit the link in the episode description to support now.
Welcome to the Mixtape Lounge. Please welcome your host, Greg Howard Jr.
His track, So I Did, has dominated the Your Life the Mixtape official charts for the past few weeks. Please welcome the absolutely incredible Vaughn Beaker to the Mixtape Lounge. Hello.
Hello. Very kind. Very kind. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. So for the people who are not familiar with you and your music, and shame on them for not being so. Exactly. What can they expect from So I Did?
So I Did is, in broad picture, I play indie folk. So that's that. I feel like I can get away with a lot of things within that genre. Genre is a tricky thing these days, especially. They kind of all bleed into each other. So I think So I Did, we did a sound wise, we did a lot of playing with different kind of like weird reverse sounds and kind of bent things and broken things and a couple of different rhythms going on over top of each other. There's some electronic stuff mixed in with some other stuff. There's like some weird, really slow, demonic sounding vocals way underneath the track in a couple spots. And it was a really fun song production wise. So I think like So I Did is a great track to listen to with headphones on, I would say, just because you're going to get rewarded. There's a lot of little surprises throughout the song if you listen closely. And then content-wise, the reason we went that direction is because the song is kind of about losing somebody that you love. Pardon me. Losing someone you love to a cult and all the kind of weirdness and hard realities to reckon with that might come with that situation. So wanted to put a bunch of weird kind of disorienting sounds throughout the song as well.
So talk me through the decision to make So I Did your next release.
Yeah. It was actually, so I have a record coming out the end of June, June 28th, called Dumb Hope. And I've been working on, it'll be like 2 years since I started working on it when the record actually comes out. So a lot of these songs I've been sitting with for a while. And there was so many that I wanted to release. We had it down to four, and they were all kind of not the same, but they're sitting in similar veins production wise. And So I Did just does so many different and I think interesting things production wise that I really, really wanted to get it out as a single just to make sure it got heard on its own, got a little bit of a voice of its own before it got kind of swallowed up in the whole record release. So we kind of like took the timeline that should have been for four releases and shoved this fifth one in there just because I was so kind of proud of what we did with it. So I just wanted to make sure it got a good hearing.
Of all the songs that are on the album that's coming out, do you have a favorite?
Oh, that's a what's the word? A devious question. You're putting me in a bad position. I don't know. You know what? It kind of changes all the time. Again, like the very first song, I think that, there's the title track, Dumb Hope, which is going to be the single that the lead single that comes out with the record. And that definitely would have been my favorite at the beginning. And it kind of like most obviously encapsulates what the whole album is about. But I've kind of fallen, it's been like, it's weird when you're a songwriter and you sit with material for years and years and years, sometimes before it ever sees the light of day. And so you kind of fall in and out of love with your own songs. And I think all good art, kind of the meaning shifts with along with what's going on in your life. That's why you can revisit, songs that you love or movies or books that you love over and over again, and they're different each time because you're different, right? So I think depending on where I'm at, I would have a different answer to that question. We Don't Even Fight Anymore, which is the last single that came out before So I Did, would be a contender for me for sure, just because a great artist from Calgary named Taylor, they sang on the track, and I just love their vocal performance so much. So yeah, that one would be up there for sure, but I don't have an immediate favorite, I don't think. No. I love them all. And I will say, pardon me, sorry. I will say, is it Greg? Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, I'm seeing it on your image there, so I just didn't want to assume. But yeah, I will say, Greg, that like, for me, Dumb Hope is really, I really wanted to create an album that has a whole arc to it. So it's been interesting releasing these songs as singles because I really do think of it, and I know maybe everyone says that, but I think some albums are just like, these are all the songs I had ready to go at this time. I think with the way we sequenced Dumb Hope and the songs that we chose to be on it, it was really intentional to kind of take the listeners on a bit of a journey. So it kind of starts in a light, pardon me, it kind of starts in a light, hopeful place. It gets pretty dark for a while and then kind of lifts back up out of that at the end. So I think the whole thing really works as a whole. I know that's a cheap thing to say that you should just go listen to the whole record, but I think the experience of any one of the songs is going to be changed by listening to it in the context of the record, to be honest.
Like that. I'm a music listener who prefers to do like the whole album as opposed to, whatever's released as singles, because usually what the tracks that don't get released as singles are 9 times out of 10 for me, are better than what's released.
Yeah, and there's some songs on this album that like there's one called What You Don't Know that I think is just emotionally like a real kick in the chest, but also like musically it's just got a great groove to it. I'm really proud of it. So I hope that's one of the ones I hope gets heard, even though it wasn't an official single, quote unquote, but I do hope people give it the time because yeah, I'm pretty proud of that one. That one might even be my favorite as of today, anyways. You ask me tomorrow, it might be different. But yeah, I just started. So one of the things I love doing, like I co-produced my first record at home because of COVID, and not wanting to wait around till I could do a record in a proper studio. So I learned a lot from that. And when I came to this record, I wanted to use those skills, but I also wanted to have someone bring there's like help me elevate it and kind of bring another perspective. So I co-produced this record, and I'm trying to do more and more production here in my home studio. And so one of the things I've been doing to try and get better at that is just deep listening. So I've been taking Fridays, started just a few, maybe 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, just to listen to a full album front to back and like not do anything else. I just kind of sit on my couch in the studio, close my eyes for a bit and just take in the whole record. I try not to even, make notes about it or anything like that, just to take it in. And some of the albums that I've listened to really work that way. Like they've been just a really gorgeous and like meaningful experience as a record from start to back. And when that happens, I as a listener, I really appreciate it. I think Angie McMahon, I want to say. I'm gonna look this up because I don't want to get it wrong. But I mean, maybe my favorite record I've listened to in a long time, and I've been returning to over and over again, is this record by Angie McMahon called "Light Dark, Light Dark, Light Again." Yeah, by Angie McMahon, and that's a record that I just think exemplifies that perfectly. You put it on, let it take you over for an hour, and you go on this whole emotional journey. It's pretty powerful. I just appreciate that she put that together so we could have that experience.
We're now in kind of this landscape where it feels like that anybody with an internet connection can put out music. What is it that sets Von Beaker apart from everybody else?
Yeah, well, I mean, the only thing I really could say to that is Von Beaker. I mean, that's the only thing I can hope for, right? I mean, I wouldn't say I'm better than anybody else, but different for sure. So, I mean, you're going to get a unique, which I think, I don't want to necessarily get into AI music and all that stuff that's going on right now in the world. We're all trying to wrestle with and think how we feel about it. But that's one thing I think that, with AI art and stuff is the mechanics of it and like the technical things of putting chords together in a certain direction and writing a lyric and stuff. I'm sure, it seems like computers can kind of already do that, but I'm sure that's only going to get better. But what I really have a hard time imagining is any sort of artificial system kind of putting the story of the artist into that, or the personality of the person making that work, I think is really important. I'm a person who really believes that like artists are always more important than the art they make, always more valuable. I think people are more valuable than products, and I think art, as good as it can be, is always a product. It's always something that's been made. So I care really deeply about the people making the things, and I'm one of a kind. So hopefully something about that comes through in my music, whether it's like the way I certain lines that I write, the perspective I have on the world, the way I put two chords together, the way I bend the strings a little bit on my guitar so it's not quite exactly in tune all the time, or little things like that that I just think are, I mean, I think the strengths of my music, as a more simple answer, is I'm really about connecting with listeners on a deep level, kind of emotionally. So hopefully the music that I make does that, whether it's literally through the lyrics or just something in the sound or the groove or the chord choice that does it at a deeper level that you don't even understand. Like that's kind of my goal, is to make those connections. But there's a lot of artists who do that really well. So hopefully the thing that I do different is just bring the more I'm authentically myself, I think the better chance I have of bringing something new to the table.
Thinking back to when you decided you wanted to pursue music, has there been a change in your creative process?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question, Greg. I mean, I've made music since I was a teenager, which is a lot longer ago than I'd like to admit. And I still remember having like a karaoke machine in my mom's apartment that I would record something onto and then dub it onto the other side of the tape and record something over that. And that's kind of the way I did my first recordings until I got a 4-track cassette recorder. And I've just been doing this forever, and it's always been kind of a it always has been, because the kind of the muse, I guess, won't leave me alone. It's just songs. There's just songs inside of me, and I don't know, I've been in different stages throughout my life of sharing those or not sharing those, or feeling like they deserve my attention or not. Being an artist is really difficult. I'm sure that's not news to anybody. It can be pretty daunting at times. So at certain times in my life, for a long time, it seemed a lot easier to not make that kind of my main focus, but it's the thing that's kind of come back for me most consistently. So I was in my mid 30s when I decided to actually try and make a go of it as Von Beaker, try and carve out a career making music and actually playing stages and traveling the world and sharing my music with people. That's kind of when I gave up. I call it giving up and just like letting music have its way with me. And I would say since I've done that and given more time to it, it's got more, I've worked it harder for sure. Like, I wouldn't go over lyric, like basically whatever would flow out of me. If a song didn't come to me in half an hour, you know, prior to that, if I couldn't write a song start to finish basically in a half an hour, I just wouldn't bother with it. And I was lucky enough that that happened pretty often. I would get songs that would just kind of fall out of the sky and put them down and be done with it. But the more I write, the less that happens and the more it becomes a little bit of work. So I think the creative process now has had to become a lot more intentional about actually learning my instrument, actually spending time going over lyrics and editing, all things I didn't do 10 years ago, so.
How do you balance artistic expression with commercial appeal when you're writing?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I'd like to say I don't care about commercial appeal at all, but that's not true. Because it costs a lot of money to make music. I mean, my goal, my idea of making it is just being able to continue to write and share songs of a high quality recordings and tour around and play those songs for people and have recordings so that when I do play those songs, they know they have heard them before. You know, that's kind of my goal. But all of the steps in making that happen cost an obscene amount of money sometimes. So there's got to be money coming in to pay for that, right? So there's a bunch of different ways you can make that money. I think if you can make it making music, that's not a bad thing at all. And sometimes, yeah, that means making some different choices. I guess very practically, like nuts and bolts, there's songs that I've put out that the intro is different because I want it to be on a playlist, and a 45-second intro before any vocals come in is probably not going to serve me well in that context. So those are choices that I don't know that they make the song worse, but it's definitely like a dance I have going with like where do I want this song to go, and kind of what do I need to do to tweak it to fit into that mold a little better. That being said, my song Broken Down that's coming out right away here. It'll be out by the time this airs. It has a 30 seconds intro, so sometimes I just don't care and say this is what needs to happen, but yeah.
What would you say is the coolest thing about being a musician?
Oh man, just being on stage and having people just throw dollar bills at you from the crowd. Amazing. No. Yeah, for me, again, it's like it's connection. So, when I have somebody, there's a lot of stories I could tell, but a short one. I have a song that I wrote for my wife about, like, my wife's not the greatest dancer in the world, to put it mildly. But really, really romantically, I think she'll still dance with me whenever we go to like weddings or things like that. Because I like to dance. And so I wrote this kind of country waltz song for my wife about that. And that's what I wrote it about. It was about our kind of love story and our experience. And I was playing this pretty small gig out in the country for somebody's like 40th wedding anniversary, I think it was. And it was raining outside, so the weather was really crappy. We had this kind of little shed that we could hide out in. But we were calling it, I was supposed to play two or three sets, and I think I played one, and it was like, yeah, we're just going to call it because the weather's so bad. And I was feeling kind of down on myself and whatever. And so I called it early, and then someone said, oh, you know what? The couple never had their wedding dance. Do you have one more song? And for whatever reason, I hadn't played this song yet. I had totally forgotten that it existed. And it was like in that moment, I just remember it. It was really like I just felt like all the gears kind of clicking into place. And it was like, I really felt like, oh, I wrote this song so that I could be in this place at this moment and play this song for these two people, in this context. And so I did that, and they did this dance. It was like this 60-some-year-old couple dancing to the song. Everybody cleared out of the floor and just kind of watched them dance as I played this song, and everybody was wiping away tears, and I was getting a little teary, and it was just like, what an honor to be part of, like an intimate moment in somebody's life, you know, in that way, that I'm a stranger before that, I'll probably be a stranger after that, but in that like 3 minutes, we have this really deep connection. I think that's the coolest thing to me about being a musician. And it happens more often than I deserve.
That's a really beautiful story. I love that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, anybody who puts music, even if you don't play live, those things happen. Like I was listening to that Angie McMahon record, and it was just like speaking to me in ways that were really, there's one song where she just ends the song like screaming the line, "It's okay, make mistakes, it's okay, make mistakes," just over and over again. And that's something that I've had to learn so many times in my life, is just being okay with screwing up and knowing that that's part of life and everybody does it and move on. But just to hear that, it made like a really, it was like a little therapy session for me. And now she doesn't know that. She doesn't know that I was listening to that song and that it was moving me in a really personal, unique way for me. But that's probably happening to thousands of people all over the world listening to that record. So we don't know, you know, as musicians, we get to have more of those moments than we'll ever know, which is pretty special, I think.
How do you maintain authenticity in what is often like an extremely superficial and image driven industry?
Yeah. I've thought a lot about that, because I also think a lot about, you know, musicians as characters, because here's the thing. I think as soon as you say, this is how I think about the world, or this is like something that happened to me, and record that and intentionally put that out for hundreds or thousands or millions of people to hear, that's not really, like, there's something, I don't know if inauthentic is the right word about that, but that's, you're engineering that, like, you know what I mean? That doesn't just happen. It's not like someone just bumping into you on the street and having an experience. It's like, you're very intentional about that. The idea of me being on a stage as one person, or with my band, there's four of us being on a stage and 100 people being out in front of us, having to listen to every word I say, like, that's already a weird scenario. So I think authenticity is kind of a funny thing, because I think it's a little bit of BS, to be honest. Like, I don't think any of us, like, we're all doing something that's a little bit of an act, if that makes sense. And that's our job too. That's what people want, right? They want a performance. They want some level of, so I don't know. So that's why, one of the reasons I always like wear a bow tie when I perform, it's like the silliest thing. But one of the reasons is because it separates me from being just me. It's like a bit of my, I don't know. It's like it's a costume for me. It's a very minor costume, but it reminds me that I'm like stepping into this role. I am now Von Beaker, and this is me, but it's also not me. There's some distance here. And that allows me to play. That allows me to write songs that aren't necessarily true about me personally. It allows me to play with character a little bit, play with performance. And I like that distance. So I'm always striving for authenticity, but not necessarily truth, if that makes sense, or maybe the other way around. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah. That absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. I don't remember who says it, but there's one of my favorite art quotes is that art is a lie that tells the truth. And I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
Do you have a secret to maintaining a healthy work-life balance as a musician?
Oh, no, but if you do, Greg, I'd love to hear it. No, I'm working on it. I mean, it kind of, I guess one of the things that I probably, So I'm pretty old, I would say, like relatively. When I started this at one of the reasons I decided to like do this at 35, 36, whenever it was when I really got into it, and take it seriously was because I was like, man, I should have done this a long time ago, and it's only going to get harder. Like I can't go back in time. Might have been easier. It feels like it might have been easier to start a career in my 20s than in my 30s. But it also felt like it would be easier to start in my 30s than in my 40s. So I was like, whatever, I might as well do it. But I think because I came at it later in life, even though I feel I'll still go to events sometimes and feel like a bit of an outsider because I can't stay out late every night. I can't like live that life of like just giving everything to music. I just can't. But that probably gives me a little bit of keeps me a little healthier too. I have some pretty serious mental health challenges that I deal with as well. And I've learned a couple of things that I need to kind of ward that off are like sleep is really important to me, and maintaining like a pretty regular routine is really important to me, and exercise as well. So like I do those things not really for work-life balance as much as like to keep myself literally sane. But I think that helps as well. And just having had, I've had a family, I've raised kids, I've been married for what, 24 years this year. So I've kind of been through, I kind of did that stuff first and set those boundaries and put some pretty firm like fences around protecting my family life. And so I just don't think it's a pretty easy no to me when I have to make those decisions. And it's why I won't ever like tour for 250 days a year or whatever. I just can't. Some people can, they're built for it, I think. I just know that about myself that I can't do that.
Do you consider yourself to be an artist or an entertainer?
I reject the dichotomy.
Excellent.
Well, both. I'm both, I would say. Yeah, I think you can be both.
Like that. So that being said, are you the musician that you thought you'd be when you started out?
Oh, that's a really good question, Greg. It's like you've done this before. No. I'm not sure how I can expand on that for you, but I think pretty clearly, no. I think the biggest thing is like every time I write. So I often talk about like songwriting as betrayal, like a great song kind of betrays you in that you'll start out writing something and not expect to like go a certain place, and the song just kind of takes you to that place, and you hear it back to yourself, read it back to yourself, and you're like, oh, I didn't think I would talk about that. I didn't think I would say that out loud. But those become the songs that are the most meaningful to other people, right? And if we want to go back to authenticity, when you allow something to come out of you that you've guarded pretty closely. And so I think I probably wouldn't have thought I would go there. Some of the places that music has taken me, it's kind of allowed me to process some things that I think I've had a really hard time processing in any other way. And that's been surprising, but I'm grateful for it.
So tell the folks listening at home and all over the world where they can get their hands on your music.
Yeah, well, everywhere fine music is streamed and sold, you should be able to find Von Beaker. I've got a Bandcamp, and then of course all the streaming services, and my website is vonbeaker.com. I think one of the best email lists in the universe. That's what I'd like to believe. So, it's called Von Beaker Backstage, and that's where I release. Like, if you're really into what I do, that's the best place to follow along. It's just backstage.vonbeaker.com. You can sign up there for free. And that's the best way to kind of find out anytime I put out new music, and I release a lot of like songs in progress and different versions and things like that way as well. So that'd be the best. Otherwise, yeah, just connect with me on social media, follow me on Spotify so that we can please our algorithm overlords, please, and Yeah, those, all the places.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your day to talk to me about you and talk to me about the music. I've enjoyed this so much.
Oh, thanks, Greg. Thank you so much. I hope I'm a known rambler, so I hope I didn't ramble too much, but I really appreciate every time I have a conversation like this, it helps me think about what I'm doing in a new way. So I appreciate the great questions and really appreciate the charts that a lot of people have got to hear. So I did because of what you've been doing with the charts. So thank you for that.
Stick around for more of the Mixtape Lounge right after this.
From the minds that brought you the smash hit podcasts, Your Life the Mixtape, and Headliners comes Your Life the Mixtape Magazine, a free monthly digital magazine that focuses on music, culture, and social commentary on current news and events. Visit www.yourlifethemixtape.com to subscribe today.
Hello there. I want to take a moment to talk to you about Dear Dean magazine from Dear Dean Publishing, my favorite subscription only monthly digital magazine. It's got subscriber generated content about politics, pop culture, travel, family, pets, and poetry and wellness articles and features, contributor articles from nationally recognized journalists, writers, and artists, and provides opportunities for novice writers and authors and other contributors to share their voice, talents, and words. Did I mention that it's completely free? Dear Dean Magazine provides free advert space for small creators, authors, and podcasters, fulfilling its vision that some art should always be free. It's owned and operated by Myron J. Clifton and is designed and distributed by Katia J. Lerner at Buzzword Consulting. Visit deardean.com/subscribe to get signed up.
Hey Suge, I am the one and only Jennifer Bush Harris, known in other parts of the multiverse as What Jay Said. From the planet of TikTok comes What Jay Said, the podcast. Find me on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. I am a match struck and fire is at work.
Single Look Me in the Eye Love is out right now for your listening pleasure. Please welcome the absolutely amazing Caroline Park to the Mixtape Lounge. Hello.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. So tell me, for the listeners who may not be familiar with your music, and shame on them for not, what can they expect from you?
Oh my. Well, they could expect a little bit of emotion, a little bit of regret, and a little bit of cherishing what we have in front of us, and gratitude, I guess. That would be a better word for it.
So now you have an album coming out. Talk me through the process of selecting which singles you're going to release prior to the album.
Well, it's funny how it's kind of unfolded. The process was, I didn't know what to call this album. And I started looking at the different singles, the stronger songs, and there were three different title tracks, as you might call them. And so I didn't want to call the album Deep Sigh because I thought it was a Debbie Downer. But then I was feeling like, this is my fourth or fifth original album now. And you think I'd know what I'm doing by now, but for some reason I was just stalled out. And so I went to someone and I had a consultation. And he was so helpful. And I just felt like Deep Sigh was the strongest song on the album, but I'm like, can you name an album that? And thankfully he's super melancholy and chill. And he was like, absolutely. I love depressing stuff. And he kind of just gave me permission to go with my instincts. And so I'm so glad I did that. It's turned out really good. I really like the album artwork that I chose. I think it really resonates. And Deep Sigh is kind of heavy emotional, but then you look at the different songs on the album and there are a couple happy ones, but really it's a lot of storytelling and a lot of like expressing where I'm at right now or, you know, just different heavy subjects that are really meaningful. And so I thought Deep Sigh actually sounded really good. I just needed someone to tell me it's okay to be a little dreary.
So of the songs that are on Deep Sigh, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I really like my single that's out right now, Look Me in the Eye, Love. Even though it's not written from a place that was very personal, it was written after I watched the movie The Highwaymen. So it's just the story of Bonnie and Clyde, like how they might be interacting in those final 24 hours before they were both killed. And so although that's not like a personal story to me, it was still super upbeat and really a hard driving song. And I think it's probably one of my favorites because it's so easy to write depressing songs that are slow and dreary. And I really like the energy in that song. And the soloist that I had come into the studio just dressed it up so nice. I just can't believe it's even my original tune, to be honest.
We're in this landscape where it feels like that anybody with an internet connection can put out music. Mm-hmm. What is it that sets Caroline Park apart from everybody else?
Wow, that's quite a question. You know, I think it's being daring. I feel like I'm open to taking a risk. I'm okay with putting out content with a little bit of mistakes in it, but you know, I hired a producer that is not. And so that has boded very well for me. Like he has such a refined taste. When I make suggestions, he's open, but he's also like, have you considered this? And so I think that as a pair, we are very well suited to work together because I'm kind of a freewheeler and I'm just kind of like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. And you know what? With a little more thought, it could have been just a little bit better. I look at that with a few of my previous albums. And so I think that this is kind of a match in heaven. We've done two albums together and I'm going to start my third album with him this fall. And so I'm really excited about this partnership. It's really working well for me.
Nice. So you've put out quite a few bodies of work.
Mm-hmm.
How has your creative process changed since that first album?
Wow. Well, yeah, when I wrote that first album, it was all coming from a place of hurt. And I was trying to escape the hurt. So my first album has a couple serious tunes on it, but for the most part, it's like there's 15 originals and like 13 of them are like happy-go-lucky tunes. I was trying to kind of escape reality. And so I was just reflecting on previous happy times in my life and kind of like bringing them back to life. And so that was really interesting. But now I've released one, Yeah, I did three albums with my first producer, and they were all really, really heartfelt and purposeful. And then these last two, I feel like I've kind of been able to like let my creativity just flow and not be wrangled into any genres or any expectations from myself or from other people. I just kind of thought, I'm just going to be who I am. And there, it's so empowering to just be like, I am an artist. I will always be an artist. If I never sell a CD or a download or whatever, I'm doing this for free to give to the world because it's who I am. And so when I kind of reconcile that I'm not in it for the money, it's a hobby for me. My husband has a good job and he's wants me to raise the kids, and I focus on my kids. That's my number one focus. And my number two focus is keeping my house in order, and then I have my other duties. And songwriting is in my life every single day, and it really has added a richness to my life that I didn't think was possible. So.
So if you could go back in time to the minute that you decided that you were going to give this music thing a shot, would you do anything differently?
I really don't think so. Like, I actually came into the music really terribly. Like, we had people in our yard in the middle of the night trying to steal stuff, and for some reason I ended up out on the deck and I had the phone in my hand dialing 911 to say, I think it's more than one house. I think they're in my yard now too. And at that moment they picked up the phone and someone came at me with a knife, and it was like 2:45 in the morning. And so I had I don't want to say a traumatic brain injury, but I definitely had a brain problem for about a year. Like, I didn't feel normal for about a year after that event. I went to therapy and all that, and it was through songwriting that I was able to recover and to get back to my family and be who I needed to be for them. And I like it was a horrible event, but I don't know if I would erase it if I had the power to do that, because since then, like, I don't know who I would be without all my songs.
What would you say is the coolest thing about being a musician?
Oh, the freedom. I love the freedom of being a musician, and just like there are no rules. Yeah. When I was younger, I used to ask people questions like, well, would you do it this way or would you do it that way? And I never got a really definitive answer, and it kind of bothered me. I wonder if I have some like mental processing issues sometimes. But now that I'm older, I feel like the more I learn about life, the more I realize that there is no definitive answer most of the time. And it's like it's how you interpret it at that time, and what you do with it. And I don't know, the more I learn about life, the more complicated I feel like it really is.
How do you go about maintaining authenticity in what is notoriously an image-driven and superficial industry like the music industry?
Wow, like, have you done this before or something? Yeah, that's some really good questions. It's funny you should say that, because I was talking quite blatantly to my girlfriend. I said, it's all fake, right? Like, the internet is fake. It's not actually real. Like, it's not real life, right? It's not a real interaction. It sure is nice. And living rural in the middle of nowhere, I don't really have many opportunities to get social. Like, I have to go out of my way to make that happen. And so the internet kind of smooths that over a little bit for me here and there, but for the most part, it's fake. Like, you need to put out positive stuff because it's full of it's a toxic place. And so I just put out happy-go-lucky stuff, and I don't really share. Like, I shared my breakfast this morning, but there are many meals that I would never share, And it's like, why bother? I don't know. It's pretty complicated, I gotta say. I do watch what I put out as far as photos go, but like, in saying that, there's a like a thousands of photos of me, I feel like, online now. Since I started music, if you Google me, I'm like, yeah, that's totally me in so many different areas in my yard. I used to put stuff out that, from in my home, and I don't know. I look at those videos now and I'm thinking, you know, the world really doesn't need to be in my home, do they? So yeah, throughout the last few years, I have kind of become more aware of boundaries and realizing that just because someone's putting a certain image out online does not mean that's, you know, exactly how it is. It's similar, or that's an angle of it, but it's not the full story, right? You never really get the full story on like most of the people that you meet.
How does Caroline Park define success?
Aiming up and keep struggling and keep aiming up and don't lose hope.
Because that.
I have gone so many, I had a terrible adolescence and I almost didn't make it into adulthood. And so since about that time, I know that every day really is precious and it's not guaranteed. And so if I can stay humble and stay grateful for everything that I have and raise my family to have that attitude too, like that actually the world owes you nothing. And you need to work for everything that you get. And so as long as my kids have that kind of demeanor, I think that that would be success.
That is fantastic. I love that.
Thanks. It took me many years. Like I'm 41 years old now. And I feel like there are so many people I've actually interviewed. Like my first producer, he was like 76 years old. And, you know, we spent quite a bit of time together. I would just leave my farm and drive to his place. He was just under 2 hours away and I'd show up and I was gone, 30 hours or, you know, not very long because my kids were all quite young. And I finally said to him one day, I said, what is your favorite stage of life? Like he told me his whole life story and how quite interesting things he's gone through. And I said, if you could go back in time to any stage of life, where would you go? And he said, right now. And I was like, really? 76 years old? And you want to stay where you are? Like, and he said he's learned everything. He's been through it all. And, you know, there's no, nothing fun about growing up. Really, it's kind of like cutting your teeth. It's not exactly pleasurable. So I feel the same way. I don't know if I would trade my knowledge now for youthfulness, even though I look at pictures of me when I'm 25 and I'm like, oh, that would have been nice to maintain that. But you know, I feel like I've never been in a better place now than I am. So it's wonderful.
I turned 40 last year and there's something about turning 40 where like suddenly you're centered.
Yeah, it was really interesting. That's so true. So we're about the same age. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I totally identified with your website because it really had an 80s vibe.
It's I'm all about like the 80s and 90s nostalgia is just that's my entire brand is that.
It made me want to go get some GIMP and make myself a bracelet.
Yes. So you've mentioned that you are a mom. How as a musician do you achieve a healthy work-life balance?
Oh boy, hey. I cook in batches. So my meals, I batch cook. So I make massive amounts of food and then I divide it and then I recycle it into different foods so that I don't have to cook every single day. Because if I did, I would be in the kitchen 3 to 4 hours a day. And to top it off, I know this is going to sound crazy, but we homeschool. We've been homeschooling this year because we're so far away. The bus ride would be an hour and 40 minutes in the morning. And an hour and 40 minutes in the evening. And I'm like, no, my kids are not spending that much time on the bus. So we just started this September and it's kind of crazy, but at the same time, I have two girls, two boys. And so they all play together. They're like a little pack of coyotes and I can carve out, if I really am motivated, I can carve out 2 to 3 hours a day to focus on my music stuff. And to be perfectly honest, most people cannot focus for 2 to 3 hours a day on a hobby. So I feel like I am light years ahead of a lot of people in that regards. Like I'm learning fiddle, I'm learning guitar. Like I have a guitar coach recently because I realized how under-tooled I am there. And so I have that. Then I have my songwriting. Then I have my promos that I do for stuff that I've already released. And I make YouTube videos for almost every song. And so Yeah, I have a few things I'm juggling all the time, but I just feel like there are pockets of time. And when I don't have a, like, I have the privilege of not having to go to a full-time job, which is something I have missed over the years a little bit, because I used to have a really good job, but it's very freeing. Like, all I have to do is cook and clean and shepherd my children thoughtfully. And that takes quite a bit of energy too, but I have plenty of time to spend on my music. And if I don't, the other thing is I'm a really methodical person. So I can ignore my music for however long I need to, but I have a black notebook next to me right now, and I just put square, I draw a little square, and then I write a sentence. And that's my to-do list. And I'll flip back in my book and find squares that haven't been checked off. And I'll be like, hey, I have 1 hour. I'm going to go do this stuff. And so if you just float through life, what do they say? If you don't plan, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Is that so cliche, but it's so true, right?
Yeah.
If you tell yourself, I have 1 hour to finish writing this song, it's been on the back burner for 7 days, and this is unacceptable. I want to finish this song, so it's done, it's in the tank, and I can just leave it, put it in my on the shelf and keep it around for when I have a good theme coming through. So I have like 20 songs always on the back burner, that and then when I see a theme, I'll be like, oh, an album just came together, bingo, let's do that. And so I write all sorts of songs. I do jazz, blues, folk, country. So whenever I feel like I have 10 songs, I'll just make the call and let's do another project.
Do you consider yourself an artist or an entertainer?
Oh, an artist by far. You should see me on stage. I'm kind of like, I stand very still. I'm more of a storytelling artist. Yeah, I the actual performance, I that was something that I don't really have a lot of opportunities to do that where I live. And so I go out of my way. I planned something in January. I planned an event in April, 3 hours away from where I live. So, and like I brought in someone else who also lives rural, and then I had one person who lives locally in that city, and we did a songwriters showcase. And I told my husband, I'm like, I need to perform. I think it's good to push me a little bit and network a little bit. And it was because of that performance, I got off the stage sitting, I was in the middle, and I had two ladies, senior ladies, on like senior in artistic experience. And I sat in between them and noticed just how many more tools they had with their guitars. Like, I'm pretty limited with my guitar skills. And I thought, this is unacceptable. I'm going to spend 365 days to and focus on learning guitar, so I have more skills on the guitar. Because I picked up the guitar when I was 24 years old, and I did one semester at the local college, and this lady taught me how to double bass pick, and then I learned a rolling pick. So I do finger style. That's it. I've listened to Mississippi John Hurt, like the one palette on your floor. I've heard that song probably 200 times, and I still have not figured the finger pattern on that. Like, I just haven't spent the time on it. Like, I know that I'm capable, but I just haven't put the time in. So I thought, this is the year. I'm going to put the time in, and I'm going to learn how to hold a pick, use a pick, be a rhythm guitar player, because that's not something I do at all. Not even for myself. So I can't even help other people and back them up when I'm interacting. It's pretty sad. So yeah, I figured this is the year for me to actually beef up my guitar skills.
Are you the artist that you thought you'd be when you started out?
Like, I think I had no expectations, to be honest. I wrote this album coming from a place of trauma. The first album is called The Road. It felt very natural. Like, I knew it was going to be called The Road before I even wrote the first song, kind of thing, right? But I thought I would write this album, record this album, release it, and that would be it. And I'd go back to my regular life the way it was. Because the album was the prints were emailed to me, like the proofs for the album artwork and all that, were emailed to me the morning of the trial for this attack that I suffered. And so I approved the proofs, and then I went on the stand, and I had to take the stand and testify. And like the whole time I was like floating, you know, like everything was slow-mo, and I was reliving stuff that I wasn't ready to relive. And I had to listen to the 911 call. It was horrible. It was 3.5 minutes of me fighting for my life. It was absolutely terrifying. And so anyhow, I thought it was part of my therapy that I would release this, and she was sentenced to some jail time, and everything would be okay. And it was like, I was home for 1 week, and I wrote my next single called Oklahoma Between, which is like a beautiful waltz, and it's a love story. And then I kept writing, and I wrote a whole album. And that was like the next year I was back in the studio, and I was just like, holy man. And so I just realized this spring, I have done an album every year since 2020. And it's just wild. It was unplanned. It was so, I'm just so grateful for everything that's transpired since that horrible night. And so for this year, I'm releasing Deep Sigh, but I had a couple other songs, and then I had some other like fiddle tunes that I had handed out over the last couple of years, and I had professional people record them for me, just, you know, for fun. And so I have wrapped those all up. And so I'm actually releasing a second album this summer, also called Odds and Ends. And it's just a $5 upgrade if people buy the Deep Sigh. And so that was, when I had that consultation, that was an idea that came up. Why don't you do a $5 upgrade album? And I was like, wow, that sounds great. So yeah, it's fiddle instrumentals that I've written. I've been fiddling for about 8 years, but it's a lifelong journey, that instrument. So I like to write instrumentals, but to perform them, I really want to leave that to the professionals right now.
So tell the folks listening at home and all over the world where they can get their hands on your music.
Yeah, okay. So, well, you can go onto my Bandcamp, and artists get 80% of the money you send us. So that's wonderful. I'm on all streaming services, and you can download my music. I don't think most people do that anymore, but if you were going to download a song, just know that I will get pennies. You spend $1, I'll get what, 1 cent out of it. So anyhow, Bandcamp is the place to go. If anybody wants a hard copy, they can message me on my website or my social media. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, or whatever you call it. And I can send digital files on the internet. So if they want to contact me, that'd be awesome. But I do love sending out all my CDs, have an album, beautiful album artwork, and I have lyric insert books. So you can read all the lyrics and the kind of sometimes the stories behind the song. And I love to send an old fashioned letter in the mail. I've sent CDs all over North America. So it's been great.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your day to talk to me about you and talk to me about your music. I have enjoyed this so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on your program and for taking the time too. I know it was a little bit short notice, but I'm really glad it was able to work out.
Tragic tales that my sad life holds in pine love, faintest breath. Feel your soul just floating down pine love, my love. Longest state in Jefferson, Jefferson, you are my one big love.
The Mixtape Lounge is a Your Life. The Mixtape Media, LLC production in association with Rod Wharton Productions. All rights and trademarks reserved.